Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, alongside me, Mr. Jack Piatelli in his wonderful Cornell sweatshirt. How are we doing?
Doing really well. Thank you very much. We got a couple of great guests today, and it's always a pleasure to be here with you, Kyle, and can't wait to get going here.
Yeah, I'm super excited. We have, do you like to be introduced as your ISL team coaches or your club coaches? What do you prefer?
Sir Justin Walker.
Okay. Sir Justin Walker, the head coach of the Rivers School and the Fighting Clams, and also Matt Rowley, the head coach of Do you say Noble and Greenhall, or do you just say Nobles?
I just say Nobles, generally. Same.
I think everyone says Nobles. Nobles and 3D New England. It took some doing to get them in here. How long have we had this podcast? Like a year, year and a half?
Close to a year now, yeah.
We've been after these guests from the jump. They don't look nervous at all, just so you guys know. They are super relaxed and ready to go. I think what I wanted to ask you guys about first is, like, how long have you guys been friends?
That's a great question.
I remember it. I know the answer to this.
Go ahead.
It's that John Harvard's.
Oh, yeah.
You asked me there to have drinks because it was during the Ken Alice Nestle days. And I think Ken Alice and my father were in some way, shape, or form, or our companies at the time were kind of enjoying some friction. And you were close to Ken, and I was close to my father. So we felt like that might be sort of a good way to sort of establish some back channels. And you initiated it.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I ever met you face-to-face. I mean, I shook your hand at Fields and stuff, but we never talked.
I actually think that I was with Nestle, but it was also when I was beginning to do sales for 3D Blue Chip for the first time as well. So I was coaching Nestle that summer. But that was the first year prior to us launching 3D Blue Chip and me going to 3D Lacrosse. So I think there was a little bit of both going on there. But yeah, that is right. Prior to that, we were staunch adversaries and heated rivals in both club and high school.
And it was really cool because you reached out and the rivalry piece sort of stood out. Like I was like, do I really want to go? Like, see this guy? I remember saying to my wife, like, do I really have to go? Like, how's this going to go? And I didn't know if it was going to go. But it was actually a really, like, we talked all sorts. We were all over the place conversationally. Yeah. And it actually proved helpful for me because at that time, with my father, that was the beginning of a transitional period in my company. And it was particularly, as I recall it, somewhat stressful in terms of trying to convince my father to do things a little bit differently. And so some of your experiences with a semi-similar man proved helpful in terms of me kind of getting my father to take some risks.
The good old days of club lacrosse.
Yeah. The Nestle days, how long ago was that? What year was that when you guys sat down and had a conversation?
So I started coaching Nestle in 2008, I think. The summer before that, I coached Box in Ontario, and I was still at Brewster, and we had some Brewster kids on that Nestle team, so I got pulled into that. And then this had to have been 2011, maybe 2010, when I was then an assistant at Nobles under Mike Herring, and was, like I said, making the transition from working at coaching with Nestle to working for 3D.
And interestingly, in that time period, that's roughly when I bought the Clams for my father. I think I've owned the Clams outright for like 12 years. And it was right around that time when I was in the process of doing that. So that may or may not have come up, but that was when I was trying to decide whether I could actually do it because my father didn't just hand it to me. It was actually kind of expensive.
It's a cross.
Right? I would like to just mention this because you talk about rivals and, you know, we have, you know, a number of club programs in New England and, you know, you've got a number of club programs that have been very long time and very well respected, but I got to commend these two guys, especially during the COVID last couple of years, especially the first summer and the spring, that eight club programs, New England, everybody put their egos aside. And, you know, it came down to, you know, it's about the players. Let's get these players out and let's give them an opportunity to play. Chris Cam with the Tomahawks, Steve Moreland with the Twisters, Matt and Justin, myself. There were a few others, but it was great because first time I really had a working relationship with all the club programs in New England. And I think it really changed the environment and the vibe. And, you know, I think to Justin's point, you'd see another club director and say, oh God, I can't go say that. Like, he's my competition. Yeah. But everybody does their thing. You know, everybody does a good job. Everybody, you know, finds a way to make it happen. And it was just nice to get all the guys together and find a way to get the players on the field, put everybody's egos aside. And these two guys were a big part of it.
Yeah, I mean, as crazy as it sounds, I think the New England on the boys' side, at the very least, the New England boys' club lacrosse scene is better off because of COVID, because of all those relationships that got built and our ability to all sort of work together on common goals has been unbelievable. And it's still, you know, we're still seeing it today with the youth spring league and some of the box stuff that's happened. So it's an amazing byproduct of an otherwise really horrible stretch for everybody, but we came out of it. With all of our club businesses still going. And I think the kids are better off for the fact that they can play crosstown rivals a lot more than they used to. Yeah.
It's really great to have all those people united against you when you're writing about them too. Super fun.
Someday I'll send you the minutes to the meetings that we have about, you know, specifically directed towards Kyle.
Oh, great. Yeah.
It's interesting too, that you think about it, like the clubs now, kids are aligned, I think, more closely with their clubs than they ever have been. And you've seen some fall off. In the ISL a little bit, half the teams almost are struggling to field JV teams. And I know, you know, we are to an extent. I think other teams, there have been a rash of cancellations. And some of that's interesting. You think about the pandemic. This is a little deep, so bear with me. But, like, my kid's a club soccer player, fifth grade. All he had to do, like, the only thing he could do was go play club soccer. And they kept it rolling. Some of the schools, to varying degrees, sort of bowed out because they kind of had to for safety reasons and because they're dealing with a much broader cross-section of people. But club kind of kept powering through. So why now, 2 years later, are we surprised that a lot of the club soccer players or club hockey players are more aligned with their clubs than ever before, and that's hurting sub-varsity athletics?
Yep.
Of course they are. We kind of got them through this thing. And now those allegiances have sort of stuck even more. So it's happened at the player level. But it's also happened at our level. The club coaches are closer than we've ever been before. And, you know, at some point we'll get into the fact that the Clams are now a part of Three Step Sports. But I wouldn't have been open to that 2 years ago. That would have scared the bleep out of me. But to get comfortable with collaboration the way the pandemic forced us to do, now you see opportunities for it everywhere.
Yeah, I think two things that speak to that point. One is that I think people don't understand how small lacrosse is. Yeah. Right. Like, there's a lot of people that are like, oh, it's like hockey. Oh, it's like basketball. Oh, it's like, it's not like any of those things. It's a very unique entity. There are different types of players that play lacrosse, right? All sorts of athletes play soccer. You grow up playing soccer. You grow up playing basketball. You grow up playing hockey. You grow up running track, all those things. Lacrosse isn't necessarily at that point yet. And no matter where you are. I mean, you could say, sure, in Baltimore, Long Island, upstate New York, maybe it's there. But even in Massachusetts, which is actually the highest amount of youth sport participants in the country, play lacrosse in Massachusetts for men and women,
yeah,
right? Boys and girls. Mm-hmm. And it's getting there. And part of that is the relationships that have formed between the prep schools, the public schools, the club teams, and the youth programs, right? And I think, kind of speaking to your other point of kids having loyalty to their club teams, that's totally true. I coach at a super small school in New Hampshire. Again, I'm the JV head coach and the varsity assistant. I had a kid who's a sophomore. He plays Tomahawks. And all the kids started following me on Instagram because they think it's funny. It is. And I looked at his bio. I was like, I saw him at practice. I was like, why does your bio say Tomahawks and not Hockington? And his face was like, what? I was like, your Instagram bio. You don't even have Ogbonton in there. He's like, oh, I'll change it. I'm like, you don't have to change it. I'm just curious, like, why it says that. He's like, well, you know, I started playing for them and I really liked it. You know, it was a big part of like me developing as a player because he lost a whole, I forget. He lost a whole, he lost his eighth grade.
Right.
It's gone.
Right.
Right. So I go back the next day and I just check it. And he put, he took out Tom Ox and put it in Hopkins. I was like, no, yeah, we learned the, that wasn't the lesson I was trying to teach you. But that showed me how much that means.
It was your miracle moment. Who do you play for?
No, they don't let me run them. It's not like, when I was in college when I could just say, yell, get on the line. We're very nice. It's very weird.
It's kind of like in club, the helmet test. You can always tell how strong a program is or the buy-in it gets because out in the club realm, if they're wearing that high school helmet pervasively, that's for a reason. That's carefully thought out. If they're wearing their club helmet, that's also thought out because they don't, you know, and so you see about, I don't know what your guys are like, but for me, it's about a third wear their high school helmet and about two thirds wear their club helmet. And you know exactly what high schools those are. Nobles, yeah. They're wearing a Nobles helmet.
Right.
Deerfield, they're wearing a Deerfield helmet. Brunswick, I mean, there's certain helmets, but I think that's kind of interesting. I always think the helmet, the statement that the helmet you choose to wear makes, I think is interesting. And some clubs just say you got to wear the club helmet and some clubs don't even provide them. We make it optional. So what happens organically is telling.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Great point. Before a club match, a player looks at, do I wear this helmet? Do I wear this helmet? And, you know, there's a value added to the helmet they wear based on the tournament and the coaches that are going to be there.
Right. Might be as simple as, would my high school team beat my club team in my class? Yeah. If the high school team would win, yeah. Wear the high school helmet.
That would be great if that's what that was.
I'll tell you what, it lines up pretty clean. Yeah. You watch.
It's pretty great.
I have a question for Matt. Matt, Justin touched on it a little bit, but, you know, everybody in lacrosse has been affected by the pandemic. Yep. And, you know, college is clogged with a number of players, fifth year, sixth year. Mm-hmm. The process of recruiting has slowed down a little bit. Do you think that we've lost some players totally because of the pandemic at the high school level because of Justin's point where they weren't able to play for, in some cases, 2 years? I mean, your season last year was limited, and the year before was canceled, and even at the youth level, it was nice that the club programs were able to keep things going for 2 years.
The answer is yes, and I think there is both an immediate effect that I saw last year and into this year and a long-term one. The immediate one for me at Nobles was the one thing I feel like we've done a really good job of at Nobles is embracing multi-sport athletes and giving them an outlet to understand that, hey, maybe you're not the hockey, football, basketball player you thought you were. Maybe you're actually a lacrosse player. And we have a pretty good track record of taking those hockey and soccer guys and opening some lacrosse doors for them in terms of their college recruiting. And last year, and we need, like, Nobles needs those guys to compete. I need 5, 6, 7 guys who are playing lacrosse in two months a year to come in and help us be competitive. So last year with the pandemic, a lot of the hockey players who were sort of in their recruiting cycle opted not to play a spring sport and to play in a spring hockey league that was aimed at getting them recruited. Not like I can't fault them for that at all, but I have wondered over the last 2 years what the opportunity lost was for a couple of these guys that I think would have helped us and perhaps would have found another path. I mean, and I think so that's the immediate effect, not from a club level necessarily, although I like those guys do get plugged in. I mean, Jet Jama, for example, who's playing at BU, came to Nobles as a hockey player, and now he's a, you know, starting D mid for BU. And he played, I think, 1 or 2 years of club lacrosse with us. But those guys, a lot of them are not there. And we got some of them back this spring, which has been incredible. I think the other place you're going to see a little bit of a lag is at the really young kid level. Like my son's in third grade and playing for Charlestown lacrosse. Shout out Cam Joyce and Charlestown lacrosse for doing a great job. But those younger kids, they don't even know who they are if they want to play lacrosse yet. They didn't get that opportunity when they were in kindergarten and first grade. So I think you've lost a lot of those kids, and getting them back from whatever other activity they've fallen into or what other, you know, time space their parents want to occupy in the afternoons or whatever the case may be, I think there's going to be a lag in those really young age groups that we're going to see over the course of time. And hopefully we can get them back. But I know that it feels like the numbers are down and that the athletes aren't quite there in the way they used to be. And for those younger kids, and as a club, been really hard to find those really young kids because I just don't think a lot of them even know they're lacrosse players yet.
And you don't want to get in too late. Like my kids, the second time I referenced my son, he is a athletic fifth grader, but soccer has got its hooks in him so much, he doesn't want to go out for lacrosse because he doesn't want to be bad. The other kid's been playing 2 or 3 years. They started earlier, and he's kind of like, he's either a cool guy or he thinks he's a cool guy, but he doesn't want to be seen as not good at something. But if he started back when they did some, you know, and it was the pandemic kind of glitched this out because he didn't want to go because club soccer had something all the time, he would have been starting at the same point and would have been progressing upward. But now if you got to hop in later, whether all the way up to JV, if you're a really good hockey player or a really good soccer player at Nobles or Rivers, you may just not want to go out to that JV environment because you go out and look at the field and it's like, you know, it's 10 kids, 11 kids, and then half of them are not particularly athletic. You know, and it's like, no, it's not the best use of my time. So I do think you're right. There's been that period of time where development did falter. And then in the club realm, it's the same thing. Like, we used to send, it was crazy, it was above 90% for several years on end of guys who went on to play NCAA lacrosse in the CLAM program. It was over a decade, we got over 90%. And then it sort of ebbed slowly downward as things got more competitive. And I think these last couple of years, it's been in the high 70s, low 80s. And when I say some of those guys, the 20%, 30%, they still went on to play college lacrosse. They just went on to play club. And they wanted to go down to a big school in South, Midwest. That's trendy because they don't have the same constraints and the same rules and regulations we have up here. Pretty tempting. I get it. And so it is interesting. If you're a really smart kid or you want to go to a big school, that's starting to overpower going to a smaller school just so you can play lacrosse.
I actually have a specific example of a Clems player. So I called St. Paul's Tilton last Friday. And I knew a couple of the Tilton players. I PG'd at Tilton, but I went for St. Paul's to, it was at St. Paul's. And one of the players, I'm like, that name's familiar. And I looked at his club team and it's Clemson. I was like, oh, it's Colin McKinnon. And he wanted to go. I remember talking to, I don't know if it was you or one of your coaches, but he wanted to go either, you know, D3 or possibly D1. And he's going to the University of Arizona. Right?
He was actually recruited a fair amount by a number of schools, including some good D2s. Bryant was on him for a little while. Mm-hmm. They kind of fell off. But in the end, he had options. Right. And not just options like, we'll get you in. I remember a couple schools were offering some financial support for him. Not great schools, but that's, he's a University of Arizona kid.
Yeah.
That makes all, that's actually, I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
It makes me very happy.
Yeah.
Because that's, if I think about Colin McKinnon, the kid I remember, he's gonna have a blast there. And he's gonna be on club. And he's gonna do really well in club. He's gonna have a blast with it. Like, that's well done, Colin.
Yeah. It's a good club program too.
Actually, that's what I mean.
Camp there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was wild. I mean, I just saw that and I was like, wow. That actually, okay, so that tracks. So that's the best decision for him. How many?
But he wouldn't have listened to me up until, like, you know how it is. Talk to a freshman or sophomore about club in college. They'll arms crossed in front of face. Like, they don't want to talk about it.
I was like that too.
Yeah, and then you get somewhere around junior year, later in junior year, they're kind of mildly receptive, but cautiously.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes they just, you know, pick up momentum at the end there.
I mean, it's different for everybody. You know, I mean, all my whole family except me and my idiot brother went to Indiana University, right? All of them. And I got pushed so hard. I remember my dad coming home and he put a helmet on the table and it had Indiana stickers on it. And I was like, what is this? He's like, huh? I'm like, no, I want to play in college.
Yeah.
He's like, they have a team. This is their helmet. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going there. And I'm the oldest. So like, that was kind of like point of pride or whatever. And I was like, no, I'm going to play in college. That's the whole point. And you are. Is the thing, right? Like, I think the differentiator is I want to play, you know, I didn't think I was ever going to play D1, but I was like, I'm going to play D3. I'm going to have an impact. I'm going to have a great time. Lacrosse is everything. This is the only thing I want to do. And I think that now kids are smart. Kids are definitely smarter than I was when I was 18, 19. And they're making decisions that are best for them and kind of like for their family as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, you got to know what part of your identity lacrosse is, but furthermore, like, do you want to be a part of the lacrosse program that represents the school? And there's that pride associated with that, and then there's the structure that's associated mm-hmm. with that. I knew, like, I went to Tabor as a sophomore, and like, the structure is what kind of saved me, and the lacrosse program was a big part of that structure, and I needed that in college. So to think that I could have gone off to Middlebury if I could have even got in, which I wouldn't have, and just been on the club team or gone to Arizona, I know exactly where that would have led for me. And it wouldn't have been good because I know myself.
Yep.
And so for me, like these kids that are like, I want to go to the best school possible. And if lacrosse isn't part of the equation, that's fine. I understand that and I empathize with that. It just wasn't me. And it doesn't sound like it was you. I needed to be at the school-affiliated program with all the legitimacy, real or perceived, that went along with that. I couldn't have done it any other way.
If I didn't PG, I wouldn't have made it through school.
Yeah, so that, you know what I mean?
I would have washed out immediately because I needed the structure.
Right.
And I needed to play on teams, and I needed to have coaches that I trusted and guided me and all that stuff.
Right.
Like, I needed that. But and I think a lot of kids need that. Like, no shots at any generational stuff. I think, like, a lot of people need that to succeed.
But you want to get real deep here. Now, why are we so far down in terms of the guys that are going to NCAA programs in the last couple of years? What did the pandemic not give us? Structure. These kids learned their own freaking structure for 2 years and figured it out, most of it on computer screens. And so then maybe they got away from structure and they realized getting away from structure is something I can work with. A lot of workers did that. And that's why so there's a big shift, and I think, but there's structures due for a comeback. I think it's
the headline of the podcast right there.
Yeah, that's structures due for a comeback.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message. The Men's Lacrosse Championships, where speed and power meets precision and creativity. And they give it everything they got, from face-off to the final whistle. Go big for every goal. Go beyond your limits and enter the NCAA universe. The Men's Lacrosse Championships, May 28th through 30th at Rentschler Field in East Hartford, Connecticut. Get your seats today at ncaa.com/mlacrosse.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
I'm a lot older than you guys, and I look back and I say, oh, gee, it would have been great to go to Arizona. I've got a kid who's a skier. Probably could have played at a small Division II, Division III NCAA team. So he's at Colorado College Club. He's having a ball because he can ski, he's playing lacrosse, and he's filling all the boxes, right? And I think more kids have to take a look at the bigger picture because the end game is no one makes a living playing professional lacrosse. We're fortunate that we've been able to be in the lacrosse world for a number of years and be able to pay our lacrosse bills, you know, in this lacrosse fraternity. But the other thing is, I think, Justin, I think to your point in terms of discipline, commitment, you know, the announcement and the commitment to go to school now has become such a big thing. And the parents want to see the announcement on social media and everything. And then the kid looks at, you know, the school he's going, I guess shows up and he goes, geez, what did I just sign up for?
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah. Those are the hardest conversations to have, I think, about you're trying to tell someone what they don't know. And you can see the path sometimes for a kid. Like, you're going to go play Division I lacrosse, and you might even be good enough to play Division I lacrosse. But are you really ready for all that comes with it? and you try to advise people on whether you think they are or not. And of course they, it's a hard conversation to have because they just don't even know that what that means yet. And so having those conversations is a really hard thing. And the few times that you're able to like get someone to see the light, like you're going to have a great experience playing at X small school instead of being, you know, the 12th or 15th recruit at some Division I place. That, I mean, those are hard and but meaningful conversations. And it's a hard thing to not to sell someone on, but to help them understand sort of what they're headed into.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to reverse course. You know, I mean, the number of phone calls you get, hey, I'm in the wrong place. Well, geez, you know, now we're really in a bind because you actually haven't even played lacrosse for a year. Like you're kind of a forgotten product at this point.
I tell you about my idea for transfer insurance.
It's called the portal, isn't it?
I'm half joking and I'm half not. If I tell you a list of schools you can play at and you choose to go to one outside of my list, you have to pay X $100 if you want me to replace you.
Wow.
This is not something I'll actually do, but it's something I think about almost weekly. I'd be able to buy a nice used car if I actually employed that a few years ago.
You might get to a new job before you know it.
How much of your job is that conversation? Oh, as both coaches, right? You're running a club program, mm-hmm. and you're an ISL coach. Mm-hmm. I assume the ISL talk is easier. Is that wrong?
Before I answer that question, I know you guys, it's part of your question,
yep.
Kyle. You talk to the players and parents about the recruiting. You guys have talked to, you know all the coaches, right? You know, and these coaches will tell you, you can't do anything to prepare these kids to be ready. They don't know what they're going into.
Right.
In terms of, it's so much different than when you played at Denison, me at Springfield, you at UMass Boston, Kyle, wherever you played.
Say it.
Clark.
Yeah.
But that's also in the conversation when you're talking about recruiting because they really don't know what they're getting themselves into.
100%.
I would say it's 60 to 70% of our job. Is that talk?
Yeah. And I you know, we tell our families all the time, put the blinders on. Don't pay attention to what the family and the kid next to you is doing and what the family and the kid to your other side is doing.
Which is impossible.
What the family and the kid on the cover of, you know, New England Lacrosse Journal is doing. This experience is totally singular to you. Your wants, your needs, your abilities are all completely unique to you and your recruiting path. And that is people not being able to focus on their recruiting path. And it's so different for every kid. And it's so singular to all the things that the kid and the family bring to the table. But at the end of the day, Twitter and Instagram rule the day. And if you've got to sort of, you're counseling people against what they're seeing in the media and on their at high school practice and national signing day and all this stuff. It's a real challenge. And in the end, you know, you're doing your best to make sure that the kid ends up at the right place to have the right experience for them. Almost sometimes feeling like it's against all odds, but yeah, I mean, that's a big part of the conversation. We sit down with every single high school family and, Pete Sess has taken on the brunt of this, but we sit down with every single one of our recruitable players and sort of talk about the path forward and what they should expect and where we think they're going and the feedback we've gotten from college coaches and how we think it could play out. And it doesn't always follow that roadmap necessarily, but we really try to do a good job of sort of setting that path forward and having an open and honest conversation with them as early in the process as we can. So we're talking to our 25s and 26s about where they're headed right now, because they're starting to think about it already.
Does he do those with parents and players together, or he does he do it with
We generally do them with parents and players together. Yeah. I think it's hard to do it the other way around because, or without one of those parties there, because let's be honest, you're managing parent expectations as much as you're managing the kids.
What I do is I do it with the player first, parent second, because I find that a lot of times parents talk over the player and answer for the player, and the player will hide. If he has that group of parents or that parent, he'll hide behind them. And if you try to break that, sometimes it gets adversarial. But if they're not in the room, the kid will talk a lot of the time, or on the phone or in the Zoom. So we used to do that. And then we had some bad outcomes. So we drifted to this other strategy and the success level has been higher. But then again, Pete isn't as argumentative as I am. So,
it's well, a big part you, of it you too. Bring up another very good point. How many coaches you've talked to, and the parents are sending emails to the coaches trying to promote their own kid, and you know, the parents want them to get recruited. Well, why isn't the kid writing an email? Or, you know, I got an email from a parent last night asking if his son could come work for us this summer. Have your son write me an email, you know, because if he wants the job, then he's going to write the email. If he wants to get recruited, he's got to do the work.
Absolutely. And I think one of the other interesting things about email, you bring it up, is one of the things I'm wrestling with is like, what's the right amount of emails to send? Because some clubs, you know, send one before your spring season, during your spring season, after, and then middle of your summer, and then that.
If they're sending
that many emails, email is not a functional recruiting tool. You've literally just, you just edged it out of the space where it's functional. And I think right now, because so many club directors are carpet bombing recruiting with the need for multiple emails, you're doing away with the medium being even remotely effective. Coaches can't, they don't get paid enough to open that many emails.
My hot take is the correct number of emails is zero.
You're close.
I think the emails are a great exercise in presenting yourself in a professional manner and sort of distinct piece about who I am as an athlete and what I want out of my experience and all that. The odds that you're getting recruited off the email you sent are pretty slim.
Even if you send tape.
Well, look, I think an email as a follow-up, look, the emails that are useful are Justin and I take a call from a college coach. Hey, we really liked what we saw from this kid. Can you have him send us XYZ? Or
correct.
Can you send me XYZ? Mm-hmm. Those emails are fine. The dear coach, my name is Johnny Smith, and I play at Nolan Greenhouse School, and I've got a 3.5 GP. Those emails, I don't think, result in much.
We used to get DVDs when I first started coaching, and some of them were, and we're talking early 2000s, mid 2000s, probably the worst things I've ever seen in terms of like, I have no use for this. This is 45 minutes of my life that is now gone.
You should see some of the film we get for the middle school kids applying to our prep schools. People dodging deck chairs and stuff like that. It's pretty interesting.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
But that's right. I think the introductory email is almost a dead tool in recruiting. Mm-hmm. And this is where like the club guy comes in. We almost are playing the role of like lawyer. Like you can go into a trial without a lawyer and good luck, but you better have one if you run it. Like that's the only thing that's going to get an email read is somebody piggybacks on it either right before or right after that's credible and knows that's where the high school club guy thing comes in. So I have a saying I tell these people all the time, like high school coaches play defense in recruiting, club coaches play offense.
Our strategy is send the email, copy me on the email, and I'll just follow up over the top. And now there's a thread and there's a, you know, oh, I know that name bouncing in my inbox.
Yeah.
And I think that's an effective tool. But that becomes unwieldy too. I mean,
right. Don't you think it's all relationships though, right? Like you guys have been in the game long enough to know not only the ability of the player, but the personality of the coach at the place that player is going, right? Isn't that more advantageous than just sending a guy out because he's at that level?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And there are kids that I've placed early in my time doing this that I wish I could redo.
Yes.
Who would have had much different careers if I placed them somewhere else.
No question. I feel the same way.
Players are going to the Tufts recruiting camp day. Brown. I remember when my son John went to the Brown camp. 180 kids were there. I looked at him. I said, do you think there are 180 kids that can play at Brown? And do you think there are 180 kids that actually can get into the school? There's probably one or two.
So the whole prospect day thing is almost an I plead the fifth territory thing because it runs the gamut from people utilizing them the right way to utilizing them in a very manipulative manner. And some do a great job with it and some don't. Even that's probably more than I should say. But at its core, prospect days are a good idea.
Absolutely.
But you can almost make it a box you need to check for entrance. And when it starts to become utilized in that way, almost a box you need to check to come to school A or school B, then I believe there's an element of manipulation in that.
I'll say what you guys aren't going to say. It's a revenue stream. You don't have to agree. I'm just going to say it because I can say it and no one's going to get mad at me. Or if they do get mad at me, sorry for telling you the truth.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with it being a revenue stream because coaches need to make money just like the rest of it. It's not a bad thing that way, but you need to feel the freedom to go outside the group that went to your thing and not say it's a necessary thing to be considered, because then you're crossing into dangerous territory in terms of what's ethical and what's not ethical. There's some kids that can't get there or can't afford it, you know.
Right.
And I agree. I think that, though, like in 3D's cases, they provide a service for their players, you know. So when you go to play for 3D, they have, you know, a number of recruiting camps that have been very good and very popular. They have a lot of coaches. So, yeah, it's a revenue stream for the coaches and for 3D, but they're also providing – they really are providing a service. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, I don't think that – I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm saying, like, you can't go – there's 11 NESCAC schools. There's seven Ivy League schools. I'm going to pay to go to 18 of those if that's my ultimate goal. I'm going to go to 18 prospect days. No one's going to do that.
Well,
you know,
I'll give you another example too. And this is kind of where I'm coming from. If you can hear mild frustration, they also want our club teams to look good when they watch them. You know what we need to do to look good when you watch our club teams? We need to practice. But you know why we can't have effective practices a lot of the time? Because our kids are at your prospect days.
Well, you also need kids to not be completely exhausted.
And they can't, they're limping because they were at three prospect days in 5 days. And then they show up at this tournament and you're there to watch them. And we send the email, you got to watch this big strong middy.
Well,
then the big strong middy's exhausted because he feels like he had to go to these back-to-back-to-back. So anyway, it's this interesting thing.
What I tell my players, commit, recommit. Commit to your club team for 5 or 6 weeks in the summer. Recommit to the showcases before and after.
Yeah, that's not a bad. That's clean.
Let me just ask you this. All these kids on your team, both teams, whichever, club, ISL, either one, if they don't play lacrosse, how much, I don't know how to say this without sounding like a jerk, how much less valuable is their education if they don't play lacrosse at the college level? How much lower is their entry?
You mean in terms of matriculating to a certain school?
Yes, yes.
How much is it? How many of our kids does it help?
No, how many? Or, like, if they didn't play, do they go to the school they end up going to?
No, well, I'd say a lot of them probably don't.
Right.
No.
So isn't that one of the most attractive parts of playing for both of those entities? Is going to the best school. That's the ultimate goal, right?
Well, 100%. I mean, Jack said it earlier. No one's really making money playing professional lacrosse. I mean, people are doing it and people are starting to make money, but it's really about maximizing your academic opportunity through lacrosse. And that's what we talk about all the time. So yeah, I mean, I think the impact on the kids' academic opportunities are pretty profound, you know, when those things align well.
Yeah.
I'd say it's going to be up to 90-95% for all the club programs. You look at the schools that all these kids are going to between NESCAC and Ivy League. Those kids, my two sons included, they wouldn't be at Cornell if they weren't lacrosse players. They're good students. They're pretty good lacrosse players. But I always said to the kids, if lacrosse helps you get into a better school, it's not its job.
I mean, that's always Jack and I's thesis, right? Like we've agreed on that for a long time. I just wanted to kind of present it to guys that live it. As like, is this kind of not the brass ring, but the goal, right? Is to get the kid into the, not only the best school, but the best school for them.
Well, right? But that's why we have to be okay with prospect days too. And that's why we have to be okay with kids not being at practice. And that's why we have to be, because at the end of the day, while it's aggravating to see the lack of attendance, because you know that there are three different NESCAC prospect days in this 5-day window, you have to accept it because you know what the brass ring is. And it's just like at Nobles and Rivers, we have to accept certain hockey players or soccer players maybe missing a practice or even a game sometimes because that's their sport. I think both in club and in high school, good coaches are finding a way to accept things that kind of used to be unacceptable, but there's only so much time to do all the things you need to do
to
improve the matriculation. That's what you want. You want lacrosse to get you into a better school than you would otherwise. That's club wouldn't be a thing without that mantra.
This will be my last, the only point I guess I'll make on the prospect days, because I haven't chimed in on this a bunch. Just, I'm fine with them. I understand it's a revenue stream. It's a way to support assistant coaches who generally don't make much money. If you're going to do them, it has to be a real opportunity. If a kid goes there, the club coach has got to be able to get feedback to understand where the kid fits. I can't call you about one of the best players in our club who goes to a prospect day and here the talent wasn't good enough. Well, That's not the kid's fault nor my fault. You've still got to be able to evaluate that kid based on what he's the opportunity he's got there. So prospect days are fine, but my issue with them is they have to be a real opportunity for the kids, or it's going to be really hard for me to get on board and pushing kids that way.
You can't go to a prospect day with like 24 kids.
Well, and this
not going
to
have a game.
No, that I don't care about that. You can go to a prospect day with 24 kids. The job of the college coach is to evaluate the kids he's got and get and have the ability to give me and the kid feedback on where they stand. If a kid goes to a prospect day and it hasn't changed the course of his recruitment at all, then all we've done is waste energy and money. Mm-hmm. And I just, for me, there's got to be some outcome tied to the prospect day that allows me to guide the kid in his process.
Because we as club guys track two things. It's do they report back to us afterward, and did something come of it? If coaches will bounce back to us 2 or 3 days later and tell us how the kid did and where he stacks up, that's money well spent. If they could all do that, I'd let all my kids go to prospect days whenever they want and miss whatever practice they need. Like, that's huge. And then if there's a decent percentage of the time where there's a positive outcome, you note that, you record that. I have that stuff saved on my computer. You know, like, we know. So we know which ones kind of do it right and we know which ones don't. We know which coaches. Some coaches get back to you that night. Like, it's some coaches, it's 2 weeks later and you still might not have gotten a response. And when you do, it's just a couple sentences. It isn't with no context. And you don't really know what that means. So that's the responsibility of those choosing to do prospect days, is punctuate those prospect days with the club guys. I promise it'll pay off in spades for you down the road, because they'll want to send more and more kids that way. But that's huge. That's a huge part of it.
Thank you, guys. We're going to continue this next week in part two of our discussion with ISL and club head coaches Matt Rowley and Justin Walker. Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. Thanks again to our producer, Steve Saffron, for his efforts. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.